Far too much dancing, not nearly enough prancing.
A little mincing would be nice.
This is The Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 333 for the week of December 14th, 2020. I am angry burrito eater David T. Cole, and I'm here with Nutcracker Sarah D. Bunting.
Do drop it like it's hot.
Pointer Sister Tara Ariano.
I'm so excited.
And the Black Swan Camille Washington.
I'm not an affirmative action hire, or am I?
Welcome to another Extra Hot Grape. Joining us this week for the first time, it is Camille Washington. Hello, Camille.
Hi.
I'm so excited to be here hanging out.
Yay! We're so happy to have you to talk about tiny, pretty things. Just a brief backgrounder for people who don't know what this is. It is based on a book. I did not realize that until I started reading about it today. Have not read the book, obviously. After student Cassie Shore falls or was pushed off the roof of Chicago's Archer Ballet School, there's a place open in the class. And in order to change the conversation, school director Monique Dubois, played by the not even kind of French Lauren Holly, gives it to Nevaeh Stroyer, who relocates from Inglewood to attend on a full scholarship. And when she gets there, she finds out that her classmates are threatened, sometimes bigoted, paranoid, and in some instances closeted and hiding eating disorders. Also, someone seems to be after the fancy choreographer that Madame Dubois bullies into creating an original ballet about Jack the Ripper. Also, that may be the same someone who pushed Cassie off the roof and might be targeting Nevaeh too. Also, Cassie is not dead. She's just in a coma and she is our narrator. This is one nutty ballet school.
I totally forgot that it was Jack the Ripper thing. It immediately puts me in mind of the Tall Guy movie where they do the Elephant Man musical. Yeah, it really feels like that.
So all 10 episodes of the first season dropped on Netflix on Monday. I don't think anyone on the panel watched them all, but there could be spoilers about events past the premiere. So listeners, you are thusly warned by me. Let us do the Chen check-in, go around the circle, and just quickly say, is this a show you should watch or not? Camille, should our listeners watch this show?
I mean, that depends. I'd say, how much time do you have to kill? And what is your appetite for, like, underage sexuality, I would say? I, in fact, did watch all 10 episodes of this program.
Oh, my.
Wow.
Okay.
You would think that means I would recommend for people to watch it, but alas, I cannot do that. I think I'm going to say no, don't watch.
Okay. Sarah.
I am also going to say no, don't watch.
Okay.
I watched all of Spinning Out. I've learned my lesson. This is not good.
I forgot you watched Spinning Out.
Yeah. Okay, you forgot Spinning Out. Yeah.
I didn't forget Spinning Out, but I forgot that you watched it. Let's come back to that for sure. Dave.
Not my thing, but now that I remember that there's a Jack the Ripper ballet, I kind of want to just like fast forward to when they do that. You know, you don't need to watch it. I agree with Camille. Like, if you're super desperate because you're sitting, you know, alone in your 8-story walk up and you don't feel like going out even for groceries and Netflix is your only friend during these times and you've exhausted a lot of other options, yeah, go for it. But, you know, for both of us, probably not.
Yeah. I've watched three. I don't know if I'm necessarily going to go further, although the third episode ended on a very dramatic moment where I was like, oh, shit. So it might the undoing me and hook me with some good cliffhangers at the end of each episode. All right. Now that we've gone around the circle, Camille, what made you choose this as our topic for this week? What is your relation to the dance scripted drama milieu?
Well, I saw the title and I saw the synopsis and I thought, so you're giving me center stage, but make it high school, which sounds extremely up my alley. And I mean, that's not what this show is. I mean, I think I certainly have a lot of love for center stage. Would we call it good? Would we call it well acted? No, but that doesn't change my love for it. And I feel like my hope was that Tiny Pretty Things would, you know, scratch a similar itch. And it almost does. I mean, they've clearly cast actual dancers, which is dope and amazing, but it does seem to come at a cost in terms of acting ability, I will say. Yep. And then, I mean, some of the writing is really just jaw-droppingly bad.
Yeah.
But it's like compulsively watchable in the same way that like You or The Bold Type is, I found.
Mm,
but
yeah.
Although, again, it is considerably worse than both of those programs in terms of writing and acting. But I did have a lot of fun like watching it and yelling at the TV.
Yeah. Yeah. The center stage comparison is very apt. And I love dance movies in general, although I think this edges more toward like, it's definitely darker than they tend to be. I think in general, your dance movies are more like your light romance. This is not that so much. But what was crazy to me is how many of the tropes from Center Stage, which is now like a 20-year-old movie, are still present here, where it's like, okay, there's still just the one queer boy at this ballet school. Like, really?
Dubious. Highly dubious.
I was really shocked by that. Okay, Sarah, spinning out, let's compare contrast, because this is another situation where it's primarily girls in a high-achieving situation. How would you stack them up against each other?
Well, I think Spinning Out, the problems with Spinning Out were more that they were trying to take on this, issues season plot of her mental illness. And that's, I think, maybe not what anyone signed up for. And also, they didn't do it very well.
Right.
But it shared a couple of problems with this in the construction. And one of those is that I really feel like a lot of people, I mean, I am like worse than Elaine Bennis when it comes to dancing. So I watch stuff like this, like I have no inner ear fluid, like literally. So like dancing and skating is so aspirational as to be impossible for me. And that's part of why I'm watching this stuff. And also to feel like I'm getting like a behind the scenes, not like a docudrama, but sort of like I want to go into a world that I could never get into on my own. So then you have people who by definition live in this world, live and breathe this world, and are like dropping exposition on each other that is so clumsy. It's like when CSI techs used to explain fingerprinting to each other, like who the fuck is that for? So that's like, that was a big problem. Like if I don't know what some French dance term is, I can just Google it. Like this was made in the era of smartphones. Like we can keep up if we want to, but that took me out of it. The voiceover is absolutely just like a barrage of garbage writing. It's so bad. The idea that our central character, who, like, she's okay as an actor and very charismatic.
You're talking about Nevaeh.
Yes, but is forced to, like, deliver these lines that have such, like, almost Amish naivete about the world of ballet and her place in it, that it's like, that is not possible. Like, do they not have the internet in this timeline? Like, again, I just don't. That she's like at a fundraiser and she's like, oh, I'm supposed to kiss up to the big donors and have media friendly responses for joining the ballet school. What? Like, come on, show, like help her out.
Yeah.
She's also having to climb shelves of ballet shoes in dream sequences. Give her a hand with the writing. No. So I got through two, and like, if I were on the couch with Tara and we were watching this together, this would be, like, super fun to watch as a peanut gallery, but I couldn't continue.
Yeah.
Camille, you also work in academia, although with students that are older than this. What do you generally hope to see when you watch an entertainment product about a scholastic environment? What do movies and TV typically get wrong?
Well, I mean, one thing that I did appreciate about this, which Sarah, what you were gesturing at is like the way in which the nonprofit industrial complex like functions in these spaces. And so it's like, yes, the expectation is absolutely that you will schmooze this donor. And will you be sexually assaulted? I don't know. Probably. And like, I do appreciate that this show was surfacing a lot of those things. And I mean, in terms of seeing like institutional academic settings, I really want to see a bitchy headmistress. And in that regard, this show really delivered. I mean, she is like cartoonishly villainous in a way that like makes you want to physically fight her. and it's, but I couldn't stop watching. So I don't know. You know, I mean, probably it's partly because I was sitting, you know, doing the peanut gallery thing with my partner who was working and would occasionally look up like, what's happening right now?
I think you nailed it. That is the strength of this show and shows like this. If not a hate watch, then just a incredulity watch.
For sure.
How interested are we in the Cassie mystery? Admittedly, I said I only watched three, but it feels like we needed to see more of her in flashbacks. And Camille, maybe that's something we get more of later in the season, because it felt like if this is supposed to be a major plot driver, I didn't feel like we got enough of her. What are your feeling? What was your feeling about that over the course of the season?
So, I mean, you mostly see Cassie in the course of these like dream sequences, which are heinous and terrible. however, I mean, and this is a spoiler. But there's this wonderful moment where she wakes up at the end and she's a bitch. And that's interesting.
Okay.
That is very interesting that she's not this like perfect victim. So if the show gets a season two, and I suspect it will, because why the hell not? I think that will be an interesting character to watch. And I also think that that actress is one of the better ones. So it's interesting that they've like put her in a bed for the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she's an actor and not a dancer. That could be why.
They just keep on figuring out ways like, oh, she stubbed her toe this week and she, car ran over her foot coming out of the
Chrissy Snow Queen. Sure.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I wasn't. I also wasn't expecting there to be so much dance, like just long segments of dance
nudity,
performances.
Okay.
No, there was nudity also, but I wasn't mad about it because I like Sarah. I also can't dance at all, and I love to watch it. But I was just expecting it to be more of a teen drama.
Is there a line between enjoying this dance and then like actually in the real world going to see a ballet? Because that seems like one of the most richy rich boring things that people do just to be seen rather than enjoying the medium. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that love to go to ballet, but I feel like there's certain institutions in the world, opera, ballet, possibly golf, that exists for rich dude networking and spending money to be seen, you know, and I feel like ballet is one of them.
Well, Dave, as you know, I did go to the ballet, and by the ballet, I mean Jabberwockies in Las Vegas. And I regret nothing. It was great. I cried, and that's not a joke. I wept through the entire this performance because it was amazing.
But would you go to a traditional ballet?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I feel like I want to go to the ballet.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like this is probably will scratch the same itch. If people have a high tolerance for ballet, people who like the 13 Reasons Why might like this show. Because it feels like it has a similar kind of alignment with that, like the off-screen narrator, the darkness, the mystery aspect. You know, maybe Sarah, you watched that show too. Yes, no,
I did, but I regret not bailing while it still before it was like the 39th reason why. So, depending on your experience with that and with Spitting Out, if it was similar to mine, then I think this is not quite cooked. But if it does get a season two, I would tag back in to see if they did anything different and like, I don't know, responded to critique.
All right.
Improved their turnout, so to say.
Nice.
Nice.
It's time to go around the dial talking about something we've been watching lately. First up, Tara.
Well, I also watched The Wilds, which is a new hour-long drama on Amazon. Very similar kind of thing, sort of. A group of teenage girls, some of whom previously knew each other, but who are mostly strangers to one another, are on their way to an empowerment retreat called Dawn of Eve. On the Big Island. Woo! Big Island. However, they don't get there because their plane crashes and they wash up on an uninhabited island. And as we begin, we're with one of the survivors and a couple of investigators. So we do know right from the very beginning, they eventually do get rescued. But it follows the Lost format in that each episode has a different kind of main POV character. And we cut back and forth between her on the island and her life before, plus also the third timeline of her after the island, telling her version of events to the investigators. So in terms of the girls' characters, some are types that are very expected. There's the pageant girl who is blonde and has a southern accent and is like super Christian. But others seem to be a little less obvious in their conception. And without giving away too much, although this is also kind of tipped in the trailer, not everyone on the plane was who they seemed, and the crash may not have been an accident. And
what?
Yeah. Normally, I hate mystery box shows a lot, but this one I think paired really well with Tiny Pretty Things in terms of portraying the pressures and expectations that are placed on contemporary teen girls, especially ones that are in high-achieving environments, because some of them are. And the question of which was the trauma, surviving the crash or surviving their lives leading up to it, is like, it's trite when I say it, but it feels real when it's dramatized on the show. And the performances are good. Casting shows a diversity, not just of race, but of physicality, meaning they're not all super skinny, which is rare and which I was glad to see. Also, Rachel Griffiths is the director of the company that runs the retreat. So I look forward to seeing her unravel over the course of the season as she deals with this situation. So when I read about this initially, I was like, this is another The Society and it's not for me. And then I watched the trailer and I was like, ooh. And then I watched the first two episodes and I'm kind of hooked. So it's interesting. This might be the show that you want. If you were like, Tiny Pretty Things is like almost there, but not quite. The Wilds is like kind of good. So maybe check it out. At the other end of the spectrum.
Oh, no.
Deliciousness.
Oh,
oh boy.
Let's give in to the deliciousness.
This is a spinoff of Ridiculousness, the clip show with Rob Dyrdek on MTV, except this one is hosted by Tiffany Thiessen, our friend. And it's basically the same premise. There's a host who introduces internet clips of people being idiotic, and then the host and the panelists comment on / joke about them. The spin on this one is they're all clips about food and drink, since Tiffany is a food celebrity now. In addition to being an actor, she's written cookbooks. She had a show on the Food Network. And it's kind of a foolproof premise, like America's Funniest Home Videos was a hit for a million years, because it is funny to watch short video clips of people being stupid. And the only thing people like more than that is when someone else finds those clips for you. And Tiffany Thiessen is charming. She's a natural host. She's good at banter. She keeps things moving. Her panelists, however, are terrible. They are Angela Kinsey from The Office, not charming or likable. Kel Mitchell from All That, of Kenan and Kel fame, that guy. And this guy I'd never heard of before. I guess he was on an MTV show that is for youth, because I'd never heard of it, called Basic to Bougie. His name is Tim Chandarangzu. They seem like names picked off a list who don't like vibe with each other at all. Like, there's an early bit where Angela says something about gravy bowl and he thinks she says gravy ball, and it's like, what? And they don't understand each other. And then it like doesn't lead to anything. And it's like, just cut this. This is not funny.
You like payoffs? Do you? Huh?
There's the same thing where Tiffany is like, she's opening a clip package of clips of people dropping food on the floor, which, by the way, I mean, I'm sorry. They are funny clips. I'm not made of stone. But she's asking, like, have you ever dropped the food on the floor and then eaten it anyway? And then Tim makes a joke about, like, we did, and then, you know, something about dog hair or whatever. And they're like, no, we don't have a pet. I just shed. And Angela's like, what? Shed what? And he's like, no, I shed, like, my hair. I shed hair. And she's like, oh. And again, same things. Like, just cut this. Did you not have anything to cut? How long did you shoot? Anyway, also, no one told Tim he had to change his hoodie, which says Marvel across it, which, like, they kind of blur, but not really. So it's like you can still read what it says, but it's blurred. Like, just change that. Anyway, the clips are not so hilarious that it is worth sitting through the very stiff chat of the panelists, which is bad. So if you want to see the greatest amount of Tiffany Thiessen cleavage, and you do, that's episode 2. After that, you can tap out of the show.
<Thank you.
laughs> That is my tip
News
for you.
You can use.
Exactly. You're welcome. So for my plugs, I wrote about Pennyworth, which is back for its second season at Epics. Hooray. We love Pennyworth. So I wrote about that at Decider. And then Sarah and I were on our friend Will Leach's podcast, People Still Read Books, talking about our book about 90210. And we also, I forgot to mention this last week because it happened when we were, the week that we were off, we were also back on Dave and Jeb Aren't Mean, their Hallmark podcast, talking about, again, Tiffany Thiessen and her Hallmark movie, the one and only one she's made to date, the 2014 movie North Pole. So we will link all of those in the show notes.
All right, Camille, it's your turn. What do you got?
Okay, so I'm clearly on a mission to kill as many brain cells as possible in 2020. So I have been loving 12 Dates of Christmas, which is streaming on HBO Max. 6 episodes are up right now as of this taping. And there's a reunion episode coming this Thursday that is hosted by Shangela. So that should, like, already give you a sense of the vibe. Yep. So this is a Christmas dating show where 3 blandly good-looking leads post up in an Austrian mansion to find someone to take home for the holidays. The real innovation here is having, like, 3 leads instead of just one person who has this harem of, like, 18 people. So you've got Garrett, who is the gay one. He is as inoffensive a gay man as they could find. There is Faith. She is this straight woman who has phenomenal falsies every day and a penchant for black men, which you realize the further she goes into the show. And then Chad, who is this biracial man who says things like, I think all of our interactions have been super true. So this is a group of people whose brains have no wrinkles in them. Their brains are so, so smooth. And it really, it's like, you know, when you watch a dating show and you're like, I am the most desirable, interesting, vivacious person on the planet because these people are on TV dating and I'm better than them. This show really gives you a lot of that. It's also, like, a beautiful setting. They're up in this Austrian chalet. So the dates are really cute. So they go dog sledding, they go skiing, they do Christmas karaoke as a group date at one point. And they have this phenomenal trope where in the middle of a really good one-on-one date, the producers will just, like, airdrop in an absolute smoke show for, like, a new option for the lead to consider. And it just creates, like, a lot of really beautiful triangle dynamics that are hard to watch based on the novel Stone Cold Bummer by Manipulate. And I can't recommend it enough. It's like, and the idea that you're going to take this person home for the holidays as the end goal, it's a nice like middle ground. Yeah, it's a nice middle ground between, like, we're going to get married at the end of this and, like, we're just going to make out in the hot tub and nothing matters. Like, it's a nice middle ground
right.
in terms of stakes.
Did and you then watch X on the Beach?
I don't watch X on the Beach.
If you like 12 Dates of Christmas, I think you might find a lot to tolerate in X on the Beach on MTV.
Well,
plus, Adore Delano has been on it. That's what sucked me in. And I regret nothing.
Ooh, I do love a door. I do love a door. I needed more bisexual chaos from this show, actually.
Yeah, no shortage of that on X on the Beach. So this is my gift to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I got to kill some more of these brain cells before the 31st. I'm running out of time.
Smooth out those wrinkles.
Gorgeous. And what do you have to plug? I know you have a podcast.
I do have a podcast. You've already had my co-host Christina on. I am the other half of the Unfriendly Black Hotties podcast, a show about the intersection of race, gender, and sexuality in politics and pop culture. In our most recent episode, we talked about the Hulu movie Happiest Season,
yes,
starring the dual loves of my life, Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis. They did her so wrong with that wig. You'll hear us talk about that. We also talked about my latest obsession, which is macarons. I'm really trying to be cool about it. I'm just like, all I want to do. I wish I were making macarons right now. Like, it's good to talk to you, but I should have a piping bag in hand. I'm not really being about my business. The other thing I will plug is my Twitter. I'm at @thatblasiangirl. And if you follow me there, you'll get all the updates you could ever want about my macaron fixation and the various gay pieces of pop culture that I'm consuming lately.
Hooray!
All that in the show notes if you didn't keep track.
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, it's the Grandpa Bunsey Documentary Hour. It's back. On previously.tv, we used to do a thing called the Watch Skip Index, and the HBO documentary department has been absolutely filling my ass with true crime documentary buckshot of late, so I am here to let you know in chronological order what you can watch and what you can skip if, unlike me, they're racking up like front lines on your DVR. It is possible to delete a couple of these. Here we go. Murder on Middle Beach. Unfortunately, you are going to have to watch that one. It is a four-part series. It's about a first-time filmmaker investigating his mother's murder. It is not cheery, and it's a bit of a commitment. But I actually think it works better if you stream them all in a row instead of watching them every week. It started November 13th. It's unique in this genre for a bunch of reasons, and I highly recommend it. Next up is Crazy Not Insane. It does seem kind of insane not to recommend a film by the great Alex Gibney. It's about Dorothy Ottenau Lewis, a forensic psychiatrist who studied serial murderers. I love Gibney. This isn't a total waste of time or anything, but it misses some opportunities, and you are okay missing it and just reading a wiki summary of the film or about Lewis. Mystery of D.B. Cooper, I already discussed in the space. Of the D.B. Cooper subgenre, it's not bad. However, now that we all know, per a certain trailer, that Loki was D.B. Cooper, this one's completely irrelevant now that we have all the facts. It's also a better documentary for case newbies than if you know much about the skyjacking or read that book, Skyjack. You could probably skip this one. Baby God is about a Nevada fertility doctor who inseminated hundreds of his own patients. Ugh. Yes, that Law and Order. Yeah, that. It's a horrifying case that needed a 4-6 episode order instead of a feature treatment. So this is another one that you can skip, if only because you just got a Wiggins listening to me describe the topic. You might just want to read up on it instead of committing to the full runtime, or perhaps just watch 12 Days of Christmas instead. Nice, wholesome fun. And Alabama Snake, also compelling, also kind of incomplete. Glenn Summerford convicted of trying to kill his second wife with a rattlesnake bite, and that's just the tip of a fucking bonkers plotberg. I still am not clear as to whether the director's approach is the only workable one or not workable at all. Watch it. Get back to me. And finally, airing tonight, as you are listening to this, The Art of Political Murder, another pick-me-up for the season. This one is a tough sell. Not only it's about genocide in Guatemala, but depressingly rampant corruption, and there are subtitles. But it's an underserved topic for most people. It's extremely well-built. I will throw a link in the show notes to my coverage of all of these on primetimer.com. Whew. For my plug, Mastass Patreon. Join it today. Masked Ass is Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. That's my pop music podcast with Mark Blankenship. As you are listening to this, our December Patreon-only holiday party on Zoom is tonight. So join at any level, get the link, put on a Santa hat, come join us. And our December Patreon-only single is about another HBO documentary, that one about the Bee Gees. So sign up, join us, falsettos, reindeer antlers, it's going to be great. Patreon.com/mastass.
All right. So personally, on this week's The Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, which is a Game Time-like podcast that I run with Dan Cassino and Taylor Cole, we've got The Fug Girls. That is the latest episode that you can listen to with special guest Pamela Ribbons. So lots of people that you know from this podcast and from past endeavors like Television Without Pity are on this week. Super fun. Round one's all about iconic fashion in movies. Round two's all about high school graduate characters and what they're doing now. sort of blended movies, and you have to like parse all the bits out. Super fun. Pam might have been like on a sugar high or something. She's very energetic. Super fun. Nice. And then next week is going to be our first empty studio episode. It's sort of a mini episode, and it's a round that you play at home. These are usually going to be on our Patreon feed, but the first one is free. Give you a little taste. This week is Johannes Bassoon's pipe organ donation. And what it is you need to listen to pipe organ versions of secular Christmas songs.
Oh my God.
Figure out what it is. Here's one of them as a little example. If you need another hint, I will say this is one of the worst songs in the world, Christmas or not.
Dave's least favorite Christmas song ever.
It's my least favorite song ever, to be honest.
That's true. You do hate this song.
Anybody? What is it?
That's Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas, or just Wonderful Christmas Time.
Wonderful
by
Christmas
Paul
Time.
McCartney.
Exactly. So we've got 15 of those lined up for you to play along, and especially formatted, so it's easy to play along and pause and review it and all that kind of stuff.
Where did Taylor find a pipe organ?
Oh, he's got lots of stuff in his house.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Taylor you're talking about.
Fair enough.
All right. On the next Extra, Extra Hot Great, it is a return to the 70s.
Guy hiding in your house genre.
Small space. Oh, God. Weirdo movies. We're talking about the 1972 TV movie Crawl Space.
Yeah, we are.
And it was also something.
Yeah,
but we'll talk about that on the next Extra Extra Hot Great.
Plus my book report on the bad Ronald book.
That's right.
Which I read.
Yes. Yeah. Guys, I don't want to spoil it, but there is more toilet strat in the book. And also, there's toilet strat in Crawl Space. So that's the other thing that all these things have in common.
Dave fan service.
All right. So all that is available to supporters at any level at the Extra Hot Great Patreon, patreon.com/extra hot great. And then on the next EHG Prime, it is Stephen King remake The Stand. The only thing I remember from the last one was the Blue Oyster Cult.
That's all
opening.
I remember too.
And the guy says moon a lot.
Yeah.
And everybody's M-O-O-N. Dead.
Yeah. It's
okay.
Another pandemic fun
oh.
time.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Just in time for 2020 to end on a bang.
Yeah.
With critic Roxana Zavar Hadadi. It is time for the canon user submission this week. Let's hear it.
Tara, Sarah, Dave, valued guest. This is Francoise, and I have a bone to pick with you. Somehow, Sex and the City is entirely absent from the canon. It's a serious oversight I hope to alleviate today with Season 4, Episode 1, The Agony and the Ecstasy. But first, throw out all memories of the movies, clear your mind of the heavily edited reruns of the show on E, remember that Sex and the City was groundbreaking and iconic and deserves to be on equal footing with The Sopranos for ushering in the golden age of television, establishing HBO as a prestige TV juggernaut, and pushing major boundaries of what TV could be. It was hugely watched and hugely influential. My friends and I watched it. and our moms watched it, although never in the same room. When Charlotte got a rabbit vibrator, sales of the rabbit increased in real life. This show is great, and I will not let it be brushed aside because it's a comedy or because it's about women or because it employs truly stupid puns. That's all part of the charm. So what makes this episode canon-worthy? This episode is all about soulmates. Do they exist? And if so, is that a comfort or a depressing prospect? True to form, Carrie is in a weird place with Big. This is after her affair with him blew up her relationship with Aiden, and later this season, her engagement to Aiden will collapse beneath the specter of Big. You can feel the unresolved feelings that run through the entire show in this one phone message.
Hey, I think you're still in England, but it's midnight here in New York, and it's my birthday. I am officially old, so I felt the need to call someone older. Haha. Anyway, some friends are giving me a dinner tomorrow night. Well, actually, it's tonight. And you're a friend, so if you are back in town, it's going to be at Il Cantinori at 8:30. And if you're still in London, then cheerio, old chap. So, okay.
Who amongst us has not left this message with their ex? Meanwhile, this is the middle of Charlotte's arc with Trey. Through the show, Charlotte is learning how to look beyond the surface, beyond the fairy tale, and this is a crucial transition moment for her. She's the prude who's learning that sex is important to her relationship and her identity. She's the wasp who's learning that this fairy tale will have an unhappy ending, and it opens her up to her non-picture-perfect love with Harry. Samantha has an iconic storyline with a hot priest. Sex in the City was into hot priests way before Fleabag's hot priest broke the internet. She found the one man in the city who won't fall for her seduction, but that does not stop her from getting her rocks off.
I masturbated to my priest.
Your priest?
Friar Fuck.
Okay, I think we might have to get Charlotte a crash helmet.
You have a priest? No. She wants him, but she can't have him. It's all very Thornbirds.
In my fantasy, he tears the food I'm carrying for the homeless out of my arms, rips open my dress, lays me down in the street, and enters me.
What do you do for the next 2 hours and 20 minutes?
Stop! You are talking about a priest.
It's a fantasy. I can masturbate to whomever I like. It's imagination. It's fun and perfectly healthy. Who do you all fantasize about?
Russell Crowe.
Ah, jinx! You owe me Coke.
That's amazing. What did women do before Russell Crowe?
George Clooney.
Ah, Clooney. Clooney's like a Chanel suit. He'll always be in style.
I used to masturbate to a busboy who was rude to me once. What do you think that means? Fine, the cheese stands alone.
I love everything about this sequence. Their chemistry is so natural. Miranda is shocked by the sheer amount of time Samantha spends masturbating. The unison of Russell Crowe and George Clooney. Also, if you had to encapsulate Miranda down to one line, you could do a lot worse than she masturbates to a busboy that was mean to her once. But again, keep in mind the era of this show. Treating women's desires, fantasies, and masturbation routines as normal, hell, as existing at all, was so validating to so many women. And Miranda, ever practical, always a bit hard around the edges, she learns to let go of the idea of a soulmate altogether. And when she admits it out loud, it opens her up to see the struggles outside herself, that society never lets up on the milestones women are expected to achieve in life. These four storylines lead to the clearest statement of the show's central thesis of any episode. This series is about female friendship.
It felt really sad. Not to have a man in my life who cares about me. No special guy to wish me happy birthday. No goddamn soulmate. And I don't even know if I believe in soulmates.
Don't laugh at me, but maybe we could be each other's soulmates. And then we could let men be just these great, nice guys to have fun with.
Well, that sounds like a plan.
The men are always on the periphery of the show, even the major relationships. There is no one soulmate out there for us, and we're spending too much energy investing in the idea instead of nurturing the friendships that sustain us through our lives. The people who are always there for you, who love you, who see straight to your soul and keep coming back, that's what your friends are for. I know it's a cliche to say that New York is like a character in the show, but that doesn't mean it isn't true. This episode weaves New York through everything seamlessly, from the cobblestone streets, to the deli coffee cups Big pours champagne into, to the growing disdain of the waiter at Il Cantinori who watches his big 10-person tip float away, to the comedy of Carrie dropping the cake in the construction zone. It's all a beautiful reminder that this isn't just a show about female friendship, but about female friendship in New York. There's nothing quite so lonely as being lonely in New York, and that makes the central friendships even more meaningful. And it's funny! From the forced happy congratulations to Samantha saying she's had hundreds of soulmates, Carrie saying she left the restaurant to go home and kill herself, to Samantha saying she's 140. This show has great jokes and brilliant comic actresses. And it let a lot of us know as teenagers, or even for our moms too, that love and desire and friendship and longing and sadness and sex were all important and worthy of our own prestige HBO series. And so I couldn't help but wonder, would this episode make it into the extra hot great canon?
Thank you so much, Françoise. Camille, you picked this off our list of submissions. Please start us off. What did you think of Françoise's submission and the episode?
So upon rewatching the episode, I have to say it is a lot better than I remember it being. Mm. And I think so much of our, you know, 2020 conversations around Sex and the City is about like how problematic and regressive it is, which is still true. I mean, there's that like famous boy, girl episode, which I hate with my entire bisexual heart. That said, this episode had no moments that made me cringe. There was a lightness to the friendship between the four leads that I think is missing in many other episodes. So I think, Françoise, this was a great episode to submit. And I have to say, the case was a compelling one. I mean, to be reminded of the importance that this show had, like, culturally at its time and the ways in which it was revolutionary. Like, I have to admit, I am more swayed than I thought I would be, to be honest.
Sarah.
Yeah, I'm more swayed too. I mean, I watched every single episode of this show while despising its heroine with the fire of 1,000 nuns at many, many points. But there are moments. I've also probably seen the movie like 50 times. I'm not proud of it. It's just, I don't know why, but it's a total Poppy Fields movie for me. This does everything that Sex and the City did well, extremely well. Like, usually the writing is trying very hard to be funny, and this felt a lot less effortful. There was I couldn't help but wonder was a lot less sort of, affected and intrusive. It was well acted. The Samantha storyline is iconic. My dad watched this show and Samantha was his absolute favorite. I will never forget the revelation that this was true. Like, the entire dinner table was like, huh. And then we like got out notepads and we're like, couple follow-up questions, Mr. Bunting. Anyway, It did remind me of living in the city at that time, like the pastis reference. I was like, oh God, remember when that was the place? And there are moments in the show that, especially at the end of 2020, where like, I haven't given anyone I'm not married to a real hug since God was a child, it feels like. And there are moments, especially watching the friendships among this group of women, that when Charlotte, I forgot that this was the episode that this line was in, but when Charlotte is like, why don't we just be each other's soulmates? And I was like, you should totally do that. I mean, and then I went and watched the part in the movie, which is on HBO Max, you're welcome, where the wedding is breaking down, and Charlotte in that moment where she's like, no, like absolutely defending like a warrior, Carrie, as she's sobbing. Like, there are just so many little moments, and sometimes you have to, like, get through a lot of Carrie, like, spending a Saturday in Argyle socks and peep-toe mules.
I don't understand.
so many things about her life and how this column gets her that apartment, but whatever, like, this has all been said before. But I think that the show was incredibly problematic and also, like, an active irritant on more surface levels. But the things it did well, it's doing extremely well in this episode. And this presentation was also very smart, as we have come to expect from Françoise. Tara.
Yeah, I'll go next. I agree with everything you both said. There are a couple of moments that Françoise didn't really call out, although she had the clip of Carrie calling Big to tell him it's her birthday. And in my notes, I was like, oh, God, the thirst. But then when there's the payoff, it's like, no, she's right. Like, she has not misjudged that moment. They are friends at this point in their lives. But what makes that better is that when her seeing him comes after the scene with the four of them in the coffee shop. And, like, it's already nicer that her birthday dinner is just them, even though she's sad. It's just the four of them at their coffee shop, not doing a whole to do. I mean, she's just being honest with them. And, like, when Charlotte says, maybe we could be each other's soulmates, like, you already all are each other's soulmates. She is telling you, she's being honest and vulnerable with you in a way that when we see in the next scene, when she sees him and we know that he's her, like, guy, she is not that with him, even though at this point they're only friends. He asks her how her day was, and she just says it was fabulous, because he doesn't get to see that side of her. They do, but
yeah,
he doesn't, you know. And I loved that, especially it was very underplayed. But, you know, he is not that person for her. And maybe on some level, even after they get married or decide to be together, I forget how it got resolved in whatever the movies did. Like, even after they are partners, it's not the same for him. And that's as it should be. And I love this episode for that. Sarah, I also, when she said that line, I also was like, oh, my God, yes. And also right after that, when whoever says 35 is not 25, and then Miranda's like, thank God. Like, yes, that too.
Yeah.
Yes, hugely that. Hugely that.
I say that from 46, but still, like, same thing. Yeah, this was a delight. And the little early aughts moments of, like, the smint that Dave noticed.
Smint, yeah.
The Palm Pilot in a bowl, like, all of the dinner plan falling apart because Carrie doesn't have a cell phone, and them, like, yelling at her on her machine about it. Her dumb outfits, like, her and her capes, not one but two capes in this episode. If it's cold enough for gloves, it's cold enough for a coat. Fuck your capes. I'm sorry. I know it's fashionable,
like,
whatever.
Capes.
I was not mad at her little horse head purse, though. But yeah, this was an excellent pick for an episode and a great presentation. Dave.
The one thing that about this presentation that I will argue against is that New York City seems like a character in this show. Because New York City in this show is like a bus tour of New York City. It's not really, doesn't measure up to, like, other ones where people say it. Like, obviously, The Wire is a much different show, but you got a fuller picture of the city there.
I can't believe there was a Wire reference. That's great.
Well, it's always the first one that comes
to
mind.
It's just because Dave wants someone to take Carrie into the vacant and shoot her with a nail gun.
That's not true.
I mean, who among us?
Tara said that. I did not.
No, just joking.
And a lot of the New York stuff that she references, I thought was very forced. The ubiquitous coffee cup as the champagne glass. Like, okay, right. That's a New York marker, but it's not like you never fucking see those in New York. Like, there's one or two places that actually have those for real. The line, this is something about, basically the line was supposed to be in a Hallmark card or in a greeting card, but the full line was something from the Hallmark aisle at the Duane Reade. Like, I was, oh my God. It was like, that was a, plastic star trying to be jammed into the circle hole of that toy. The priest, I was trying to figure out who the priest reminded me of, because he's got very full lips and very striking eyes, but he doesn't really do much. You know that meme, Handsome Squidward?
Of course.
Yeah, he looks like Handsome Squidward.
Kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You didn't recognize Costas Mandalore from the feature film Mobsters?
Somehow, I did. This episode, I can see it now. Last episode, I didn't really get it. This one I get. So even though I didn't personally enjoy it, I can definitely see its place and see why it could be canon worthy. So let's put this to the vote. Camille, what say you? Canon worthy or not?
I say it's canon worthy.
Sarah D. Bunting?
Agree. Canon worthy.
Tara?
I vote yay as well.
All right. And I'll say yay too. So that means...
Hey.
Sex and the City, Season 4, Episode 1, The Agony and the Ecstasy. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Can.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's Amazon and then the 18 question marks that Tara put in our rundown doc after that, because they have ordered a series from Boots Riley, which stars Gerald Jerome. So really, we're all the winners because of that.
Yes.
But Boots Riley was, of course, the writer director of Sorry to Bother You, which was like a direct shot at Amazon. So we'll see if this continues to be a winner. But I mean... Gerald Jerome in everything 2021. So I can't imagine that if Amazon thinks better of this decision, that it won't get picked up instantaneously by some other people. And I hope it does.
Yeah, one would hope. I mean, the fact that it's coming out the same week that we heard that Apple TV killed the Gawker show.
Yeah,
it's like, okay. But fingers crossed that it will all work out.
Indeed.
Loser of the week.
Well, it's Ellen, the show, and also Ellen.
A return appearance.
The person. Well, she's having a bad year.
Every week, yeah.
Yeah. So production has halted on the show because she has tested positive for COVID, but also the timing is curious because a report came out last week on BuzzFeed that ratings are down 37%. It's radioactive. They can't book A-list guests because they just will not go on the show because she's
not dancing hard enough,
I guess. And they're losing sponsors. This also happens the same week that she has just launched a subscription box service called Be Kind, which is like a bunch of bullshit. Yikes. And it's like $55.
That alone should be
the room, lady.
Honest to God.
Yeah, that's not the move for you, Ellen. It's really not.
Girl. So, I mean, good luck with the COVID. I hope you don't die or give it to anyone, but yikes.
Well, speaking about good luck and I hope you don't die, you know what time it is? It's Welcome back to Game Time. This is the fourth game of the season. The scores are value guests in the lead with 2.
Woo.
Tara with 1. Sarah still looking to get on the board.
Mm.
Today we are playing Caroling Burnett Show.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
It is from Sully, rhymes with Julie. He's back in Game Time. It's pretty simple. It is a before and after mashup game. You got a carol. It runs into a show title or vice versa.
Okay.
It'll make sense once I play the first one for
you. Okay.
All right.
The points are going to be this. If you give me the full correct answer, which is the mashup title of the carol and the show, I will give you 3 points. But because, you know, the Christmas carol might not be everybody's jam, if you can name the show, I will give you 2 points.
Okay.
Got
it. Nothing else is happening. No steel mills, no equalizer challenge zones and all that stuff.
Okay.
Let's throw it to Picky to see who is going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. 27 questions for you today. Are we ready to play Caroling Burnett Show?
What is the rest of the order?
Camille, Tara. All right. Here we go. Starting with Sarah.
Will tonight... Michael Knight in a car out of sight, fighting crime in a Trans Am, finding those who are on the lam, driving action-filled scenes, driving Seinfeld scenes.
All right, so the Carol and the show smash up into each other. What's the answer to that one?
I believe the answer is Silent Night Rider.
Very good.
All right, Camille, are you ready for your first question?
I am ready.
Here we go.
Said the talking dog to the strung out team. Roo-ree-rut-ri-ree. Ringing through the sky, stoner boy. Roo-ree-rut-ri-ree. A ghost, hiding in the wall. Oh, wait, it's not a ghost at all. It was just some old lady shawl.
All right, Camille, we got a TV show and we've got a Carol. Can you mash them together for one title?
If I'm not mistaken, this is Scooby, Do You Hear What I Hear?
That is correct. All right, Tari, ready for your first?
Yes, sir.
It's Baby Grogu. He's a very old infant. With green leather skin and a burlap robe and big eyes that gleam and glint.
Oh, that's it? Frosty the Snow Mandalorian.
Correct.
I'd watch that.
Sarah D. Bunting, your second one right now.
Reality on the high seas, fa la 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 la. With lots of rich folks to appease, fa la 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 la. Relationships can get real fraught, fa la 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 la. While working on a super yacht, fa la 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 la.
Perfect. Thank you, Picky. This is what I watched instead of Tiny Pretty Things, Below Deck the Halls.
Correct. Well done. All right, back to Camille.
Topanga and Cory, pa-rum-pum-pum-pum. Oh, are they meant to be pa-rum-pum-pum-pum? A coming-of-age story, pa-rum-pum-pum-pum. Rum-pum-pum-pum, pum-pum-pum-pum. From age 12 to 20, pa-rum-pum-pum-pum. Rum-pum-pum-pum, rum-pum-pum-pum.
Okay, so I have no idea about the show. So it is Little Drummer Boy.
Okay, so you got Little Drummer Boy. Any idea what can go at the end or start of that? Something that starts with boy or ends with little.
My brain is smooth from 12 dates of Christmas. I have nothing. Okay. I have nothing. Tell me what it is.
Anybody else know that one?
It's the Little Drummer Boy Meets World.
Little Drummer Boy Meets World.
Oh, duh.
Correct. All right. Tara, you ready for yours?
Dishonor on my family.
Yes.
Three guys are in their 40s and they have lots to say. With Bakula and Bauer, there's talent on display. An hour long on TNT's a bit much, but okay. It's created half by Mike Royce, by Mike Royce. It's created half by Mike Royce.
God rest ye merry gentlemen of a certain age.
Correct. Well done.
Nice.
That's also on HBO Max now, by the way.
Yeah. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yep.
Oscar and Felix. Oscar and Felix. Oscar's a slob and Felix is the neatest.
Want to hear that again?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Oscar and Felix. Oscar and Felix. Oscar's a slob and Felix is the neatest.
I don't know the Carol. The show is The Odd Couple. I've got nothing on the Carol.
The wording here is a little tricky. I mean, it's, you know, it works, but it's a little phonetic. Feliz Navidad Couple.
Oh.
All right, back to Camille.
Did I get any points for that, though, or no?
Yeah, you got 2 points.
You get 2 points for the show if you can't do the mashup.
Look at these dinosaur tracks. They might be from some sleaze stacks. We travel through time, your luck can change on a dime when you're camping in the California wilds.
If you need to hear it again, just let me know.
Actually, I would like to. Can I hear that one more time? Roll that beautiful bean footage.
Nice.
Look at these dinosaur tracks. They might be from some slee stacks. We travel through time, your luck can change on a dime when you're camping in the California wilds.
Wow, really just burning up time for no reason. No idea what the show is. I do know it's Walking in a Winter Wonderland. Yep. Land Before Time? I don't know.
Oh, close. That was close. You're close. It's Winter Wonder Land of the Lost. One of those Marty Croft productions. Yeah. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Dancing around beneath the earth, there's some puppets there to see. Jim Henson is at it again with gorges and creatures silly.
Fraggle rocking around the Christmas tree.
Wow, nice.
Correct. Mm-hmm. All right, Tara.
Nope. Sarah. Nope.
Let's get the scores.
Oh, okay. Oh. Sorry. Camille has 3. Sarah has 8. I have 9.
All right, back to Sarah D. Bunting.
There are some gorgeous ladies fighting for you to see, set way back in the 80s. It fills your heart with glee.
I think this is the hardest carol. This is the one I had no idea existed.
Okay, may I hear it again, please?
There are some gorgeous ladies fighting for you to see, set way back in the 80s. It fills your heart with glee.
I would really love to hear the rest of Glow, How a Rose Air Blooming.
Wow, nice.
Oof, well
done. That's a grandpa carol for Sarah.
Yeah, sure is. Thanks, Picky.
All right, Camille, here you go.
Lots of kids in senior high are super good at singing. It might make you wonder why in your step you're springing.
Wait, can I hear that again?
Lots of kids in senior high are super good at singing. It might make you wonder why in your step you're springing.
So I know the carol, but I don't know the carol. And I feel like that is keeping me from the show. It's good at I'm going to guess Glee. That seems wrong.
That's what I would have guessed.
It is wrong. The full title is Ding Dong, Merrily on High School Musical, The Series.
It's High School Musical, The Musical, The Series.
That's right.
There's an extra musical.
There was even more to it. I'm like, that is longer still.
Dehydrated just hearing that.
Yes.
A Canadian sketch show that is sure to make you smile. With monologues and QE2, come on and watch a while.
The kids in the Holly Jolly Christmas.
Correct.
Nice.
Took me a little while to figure out he was saying QE2.
Yes.
Queen Elizabeth II.
Yes.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting.
The Alamo, Marie Curie, and Watergate on NBC. We travel through time to protect the past before Rittenhouse makes this year our last.
Don't know the song. I can't help you. I definitely heard it in this episode.
Yeah, no, I know the song. I'm sorry. Could I hear the clip again, please?
The Alamo, Marie Curie, and Watergate on NBC. We travel through time to protect the past before Rittenhouse makes this year our last.
I don't know the show. It's Wonderful Christmas Time, but I don't know which show. So buzz me.
The full answer, Wonderful Christmas Timeless. Timeless.
Oh, that thing.
That thing. Your friend Abigail.
I was like,
Spencer.
Quantum Leap Miss Time? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. All right. That was
Camille,
good, though.
Here you go.
Way out in the Aloha State several decades ago, there were police who caught bad guys with the catchphrase, Book 'em Dano.
So it is Hawaii 5-0. Oh, I don't know the carol.
You got 2 points for the show. Anybody nice. Know the carol?
Oh, Little Town of Bethlehem?
Yes.
Oh.
Hawaii 5-0, Little Town of Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. All right, to Tara.
Cherry stone, so young and very handsome, brings fresh and new ideas to the law. Back in the day, this was a funny sitcom, and it was sure to make viewers guffaw.
Oh, Holy Night Court.
Wow. Correct. Nice.
That was nice. Sarah's turn, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Come and answer this simple quiz. It is one that's given to kids. Are you just one dumb adult, or are you a whiz?
We three kings of Orient, are you smarter than a fifth grader?
You are indeed correct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted.
For Camille.
Hmm.
Some say that science is boring, that the show would leave them snoring. But there's a famous one about childbirth. It was the worst, was the worst, was the worst.
What? So Carol is Let It Snow. I give up. What is it? Tell me.
Anybody know this one?
No.
Science
no.
show? Let It Snow Va.
Oh,
oh God. Oh.
Never would have gotten there.
All right, Tara, this will bring us into another score break.
Okay.
In World War II, we needed bombs to blow up lots of Nazis. In World War II, we needed bombs to blow up lots of Nazis. The boys were all off in the war, so we asked the ladies for support. In World War II, we needed bombs to blow up lots of Nazis.
Okay, I'm going to guess this is O Tannenbaum Girls.
Correct. I made him do that one. It was sort of an outlier. But lyrics by him, but that was all him. That was great. All right, let's hear the updated scores, please, Tara.
All right, Camille has 5. Sarah has 14. I have 18.
But it's Nova.
All right, back to Sarah D. Bunting for the last third of our game time. Are you ready?
Probably not. Let's proceed.
Shut her, she's divorcee. Wish some bleak financial woes. So he joined a support group, and on the humor grows.
Can I hear it again, please?
Shut her, she's divorcee. Wish some bleak financial woes. So he joined a support group, and on the humor grows.
Oh my God. What the hell was the name of that show? All right, it's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer John?
Yeah!
what?
That's why you talk it out loud.
That's why you talk it out.
All right, Camille, here you go.
A broadcaster's wife dies, leaving him with three girls. So he asks two other men to move in with him. They all raise the kids in a painted lady. Oh, please give me John Stamos. Oh, please give me John Stamos. Oh, please give me John Stamos. Oh, please give me John Stamos and keep Bob Saget.
A lot of good context clues with that one.
Okay, this one I can do. Oh, come, all you faithful house.
Yeah.
Nicely done. All right, Tara.
Yes.
Back in 1968 on NBC, a police show about the LAPD. Back in 1968 on NBC, two hot cops and a police show about the LAPD.
Okay, it's the 12 Days of Christmas. Adam, 12 Days of Christmas.
Wow.
Yep.
Excellent pull.
Nicely done. All right, back to Sarah.
There's a person in New York selling people lots of weed. The show is about his clients and the varied lives they lead.
Angels We Have Heard on High Maintenance? That's nice. Very cute.
Correct. Back to Camille.
Just south of New England, where fun lives are led, the little girl Snooky lays down her sweet head. The cameras looked on as she got punched in the face by her old gym teacher. Oh, what a disgrace.
Away in a Maine Jersey Shore.
Nice.
I'd like to point out that the person who wrote this game is a regular on the Mass Happy Hour. You really all should come to the holiday party. It'll be this.
Tara.
Yes.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one man I need. I don't care about the meth labs or his checkered past, you see. He's the best lawyer in town. A man of statewide fame, renown. Make my wish come true.
Oh, God.
Better Call Saul, I Want for Christmas Is You.
Nicely done. All right.
That is a felony in some states, but wow, it's good.
I was kind of hoping that would end up being All I Want for Christmas Is You, as in You, the show on Netflix.
Yeah, me too. I thought
can't really
thing.
Mash up something that doesn't
add. No, you can't, yeah. But yeah.
All right, back to Sarah D. Bunting, everybody's last Carol TV mashup coming at you.
There's some lesbians living in L.A., and the show is about how they work and they play.
The first Noel word?
Yes.
Correct.
I'll take it.
All right, Camille, here is your last one.
A war show with Alan Alda. A war show with Alan Alda. A war show with Alan Alda that was set in Korea. I'm sorry to say that was no chicken. I'm sorry to tell you, but it was her baby.
Wow.
Okay. Let me think. Yeah. Maybe I can get the show.
Let me play the first part of that for you. Because the first part is really the universal clue. The second half of that was kind of for us.
Was trolling the regulars. Yeah. Oh, my God.
All right. Here it is again.
A war show with Alan Alda. A war show with Alan Alda. A war show with Alan Alda that was set in Korea. Oh. I'm sorry to say that was no chicken. I'm sorry to tell you, but it was her baby.
Oh.
Yep, sounds like she's got it.
But this is a reach. We wish you a Merry Chris Mash?
Yeah, we were Merry Christmas. It's not a reach. It makes perfect sense. I don't know what you're talking about.
No chicken.
Christmas is a time for giving people the benefit of the doubt.
And chickens. Last one, Portar.
Yes.
Here in the kitchen, cooks compete, making some things for the panel to eat. Lamb with fresh mint and lots of chives, plus a side of caramelized endives. Oh shit, no, you gotta go. You gotta go off of the show. Your yolks are dry and your palate flat. Don't underseason or that is that.
I don't know the show or the carol.
Any idea on the show at all?
No. From I mean, I assume it's like, I assume it's Great British Bake Off or Great British Baking Show. No?
No. Ooh. Anybody? This is Mm-mm. Up on the Rooftop Chef. Up
on the I've never even heard of that show. Oh, Top Chef, of course.
Yeah, it's the little show on Bravo.
Right.
All right, let's get the end of regulation scores.
All right, Camille finished strong with 14. Sarah had 23. We were lapping each other the whole time. I finished with just 1 point ahead, 24.
Oh, ooh, all right.
So close.
That was
so close.
Hard
well
fought.
Done,
good job.
Tara. Well done, Tara. Thank you so much, Suli. That was super fun. And we could tell how much work you put into it. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Oh my God.
So much.
Yes. So good.
Amazing.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We took a leap with the ballet teen drama attempted murder mystery Tiny Little Things before going around the dial with stops at The Wild's Deliciousness, 12 Dates of Christmas, and HBO documentary. Francoise was among friends when it came time to putting Sex and the City's The Agony and the Ecstasy in the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Suli. Next up, the claustrophobic 70s TV movie thrillers continue with Crawl Space. And then on the next EHG Prime, The Stand. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
46 is not 25 either.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Always something hurts.
And Camille Washington.
So sorry for that terrible performance.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Cheerio, old chap.
VH1, VH1 trivia show. Loretta Fox was something to watch. Guessing and singing is oh so much fun. But you only got 5 grand if you won.